Welcome to the Data Able podcast, where Dave Mathias and Matt Jesser dive into data. Each week, they cover the culture, knowledge, and practices that successful organizations, leaders, and individuals use to get value out of data.
Today, we have Serena Roberts on the Data Able podcast. We're really lucky to have her here. She's a business intelligence manager at Wolters Kluwer. But tell us a little bit more about yourself, Serena, and what makes you you?
Oh, wow. That's such a loaded question, Dave. I feel like I'm many different things, wear many different hats. So like you mentioned, business intelligence manager over at Wolters Kluwer, that's fairly new. Aside from that, I'm pretty involved in the Tableau and analytics community here in the Twin Cities with the Twin Cities Tableau user group and She Talks Data. Last year, I had the honor of being nominated as the Tableau ambassador. So yeah, lots of different things, I guess.
And we'll be hitting on a lot of those things. So that's awesome, especially how involved you are in the Tableau and just analytics community in general. And of course, She Talks Data we'll get into too with that new group that you put together in the Twin Cities. So we're going to start off things though with a couple rapid fire questions, trying to get things going, find a little bit more about you, Serena. So first, let's start out with what is your data superpower?
You know, it's funny. I think that my superpower probably doesn't have anything to do with data in particular. I would say that it's creating authentic connections with people. And I think that that's super important when it comes to working with data.
That is really important. That's an awesome answer. So I'm going to have to ask this though, if you were a data viz, what would you be and why?
At first, I thought this was a really silly question, but the more I thought about it, I'm going to have to go with a Venn diagram. Because I feel like I'm this convergence of many different things that may be seemingly unrelated, but it works for me. So I'm going to go with Venn diagram.
Serena, have you ever created your own Venn diagram about yourself?
Not about myself. No.
Well, there's always a time to start.
Always. Yep. Yeah.
So Serena, let's talk a little bit about, some other great content that's out there in the community. So do you have a favorite book, anything that has really resonated with you over the years?
So I don't get a chance to read many books. Most of the books I read are kids' books. My favorite kids' book is Peanut Butter and Cupcake. So if you have kids, go check that one out. The last book that I read that wasn't like mandatory reading for, you know, some role that I was in, that wasn't a fiction, was Rebels at Work. And it was really interesting. I won't go into too much detail, but if you are someone who finds yourself maybe championing unpopular or new ideas within an organization and getting pushback, it's a great book on how to navigate that without burning bridges.
That is a fascinating topic. Transformation in an organization is always hard, right? People don't want to change if they don't have to.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we might pick your brain a little bit more on that in a little bit. So what is the data trait or skill that you feel is most undervalued in the market today?
It's a good question. I feel like most of the undervalued traits, again, have nothing specifically to do with data. I think they are just sort of fundamentally traits that are harder to come by. And I know that we're going to be in lockstep on this, Matt. My number one would be empathy, authenticity, and just, you know, the not being afraid of having those crucial conversations. I know I picked three there, but I had to.
That's fine. So maybe expound just a tiny bit on empathy. What does that look like for an analyst or a data scientist?
So that is like really trying to put yourself in the shoes of your business stakeholders, right? Like really just trying to understand what's their problem. What's keeping them up at night? Why are they asking you to find this data or do this analysis? If you make the effort, if you take that a step further to really understand that, your results are going to be more relevant and that partnership with that business stakeholder is going to be stronger.
So Serena, you were talking about the Tableau and being a Tableau ambassador and you're part of the Tableau Twin Cities user group. Tell us a little bit more about why you've gotten so involved in the Tableau community and, what you think benefit others would have getting involved, whether they're part of Tableau now or they've used Tableau or maybe they're just interested in getting more involved in a data community.
Yeah, I started out in my career working with MicroStrategy, much more on the sales side of the fence. But in that role, I started a MicroStrategy user group, and we met once a quarter, and it was a struggle to get, 25 people there. And I just sort of stumbled on, Tableau started, gaining traction and recognition in the space. And we started using that tool, and our customers started using that tool, and just sort of stumbled on the Twin Cities Tableau user group. I met Nick Peterson, who is part of the Twin Cities Tableau user group steering committee with me, ran into him at a coffee shop and just said, "God, I think I know you." And figured out, where that connection was. And I said, "Hey, do you need help with organizing this?" And he said, "Yeah." So that was like 3 years later. And it's honestly been one of the most beneficial things that I've done, because it has connected me with so many smart and helpful people in this community. I can attribute like a large part of my advancement from a tech perspective to having those people accessible to me. So it's a great place to network. It's a great place to learn. I highly recommend that if you haven't checked that out, that you do so.
So Serena, you run a lot of the Twin Cities Tableau user group. So what do you think makes that group so successful? What have you guys done, or what strategies have you implemented that make that group so tight-knit and successful?
Well, I think at the base of it, it is the community. And this like transcends just the Twin Cities Tableau group, user group. It's sort of a tenant of Tableau, in and of itself, like giving credit where credit is due and, helping people out. I never saw that when I was working with MicroStrategy. So I think it is something that's fairly unique to Tableau and the community across the world, really. Just that there's always a willingness to help and always a willingness to participate and be involved. So that's sort of at the base of it. And then, the more tactical thing, aspect of running the group is just coming up with things that are repeatable from a location perspective, from an agenda perspective, and just being consistent. We meet every single month, and we haven't missed a month in as long as I've been there and as long as I can remember. So that consistency, I think, really gets people to trust that we're going to be there and trust that we provide value each and every month.
So you're meeting even in January in Minnesota when you have 6 feet of snow and it's negative 50 degrees out.
Yep. And you were there, Matt. We do. The only month that we skip is usually the month that the Tableau conference is in. And that's intentional. But yeah, no, otherwise we don't miss a month.
So another group you're involved with is She Talks Data. And that's a little more recent. And you're one of the people that founded that in the Twin Cities. Can you tell us a little bit more about that group and what you think it brings to the Twin Cities community?
So as much as I love the Twin Cities Tableau user group, I'd have to say that She Talks Data it's probably my fave. I hate picking favorites, but it's just unique, right? So most of the other groups that I've been involved with or attended have been mostly focused on like the technology, learning technical skills, advancing your technical skills. She Talks Data is a little bit different. So, by the title, it is definitely geared towards women in data. And what we do is it's usually mostly women. We don't exclude men, but we always give women attendance priority over the guys that sign up. So 9 times out of 10, it's all women. And so we provide a platform where we talk about the things that I believe are really holding women back in this space. And it's, surprise, it's not always guys, right? Like we can be our own worst enemies. We talk about that kind of stuff. We've brought in an employment lawyer to talk about the 5 things that she wished every female in the workforce knew. We've brought in people who have achieved great success in this field, like Sherry Benzelak and Carla Hillier and Laura Madsen, who's actually helped organize this group with me, to share their stories and just their hindsight, what they wish that someone had told them 15 years ago in their career. And then, of course, it's the networking. We always keep those groups to about 25, usually not more than 25, so we intentionally keep it very intimate. And the conversations that happen there are just amazing. People are so open and vulnerable and honest and just willing to share. It's really phenomenal to be part of it.
So Serena, is this specific to the Twin Cities, or is there a larger group here?
So our group is specific to the Twin Cities, but there is a national She Talks Data effort. The first one was in San Francisco that was started by a couple of gals who, one at the time, was working for Twitter and the other, I believe, Tableau, who's now moved on to Facebook. So after that chapter opened, we were the second, and I had just reached out to those two gals and said, hey, you guys, I'd really love to start a chapter. How can we do this? And since then, there's been a chapter opened up in Atlanta, Northern Virginia, and I think Washington, but don't quote me exactly on that. So it's growing and spreading as it should.
Fantastic. So for our listeners who might be in a location other than those that you just mentioned, and are interested in starting a She Talks Data chapter, how would they go about doing that?
Well, I think probably the easiest thing to do would be to reach out to me on LinkedIn or wherever you can find me, and I can connect you with the two gals who kind of started the whole thing.
Great. And we'll put your LinkedIn profile in the show notes so anybody can get a hold of you there.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit now about what you do in your day job. And you're your business intelligence manager at Wolters Kluwer. Tell us a little bit more about this and you know, how you made the switch. Because most recently before that, you're really at Capella. You know, so could you talk a little bit about maybe your story at Capella and how that transitioned to now being a business intelligence manager at Wolters Kluwer?
Yeah, for sure. And so probably for full context, I should probably back up a little bit. And talk about how I entered this field in the first place. It was not on purpose. I can tell you that much. I started it, I think it was 2005, just looking for, so I had my first child when I was 19, took me 10 years to complete my bachelor's degree after that in entrepreneurism, by the way. About the time that my oldest was going to start kindergarten, I decided to basically move, you know, a few hours away from where I grew up. And so I was just looking for a job, really anything that was going to support us. And I ended up landing at a company called Lancet Data Sciences that has since been bought by Teradata. But back then, they were a small little boutique consulting firm called Lancet Data Sciences. I started out there in sales and marketing and really did not have any kind of technical background or certainly no like data and analytics skills from a formal perspective. But working for a BI consulting firm, that was a front row seat to that kind of work. And then being the salesperson who is sitting down with the people who are experiencing that pain and looking for professionals to help them solve that, that was a really great way to sort of enter that field because I got to see that first. And I got to begin to build that empathy before I ever really started learning any technical skills. So from there, it was just sort of a natural, I was able to be a better salesperson the more technical I became. And especially working for such a small company, it was like, you weren't able to say that that's not my job, right? If you could do it or if you could learn to do it, then that was your job. So I feel really fortunate that I was able to take that, like sort of dip a toe into that water and decide like, hey, this is something that I like. This is something that I can do. And then from there, just built deeper on those technical skills. And at the same time, the platforms were getting easier to use, more user-friendly, more business-friendly. So I spent about 10 years at Lancet Data Sciences, and then I moved to, I won't go through the whole job history, but I moved to Capella shortly after that to help them launch an analytics education offering. And I sort of, my role at Capella kind of shifted and changed as well. And I sort of soon found myself as almost like a shadow BI. I hate to admit it, but I kind of was their shadow BI because I saw such a need for analytics and access to data that no one was really paying attention to. And so I was sort of that person with those unpopular or new ideas saying like, hey, we should be doing this for our customers. We should be leveraging this data and showing it in this way. And I think that this could be really impactful, you know, and it got a lot of, you know, dismissals from people who didn't get it or who didn't think that I should be doing that. So I beat that drum for quite a while. And then eventually moved on from there, just because the traction wasn't there, and that's okay. Not everybody's ready for that kind of thing. So yeah, in October, I switched over to Wolters Kluwer. So it's still kind of a new role for me, but essentially I'm working with Salesforce data for the most part. And so my stakeholders are, you know, directors, VPs of sales, trying to help them gain the insights that they would like to see from the data that we have available. And it's been fun. And one of the greatest things about it is that we have a team of, I think that there are five of us. And we have one guy. And the rest of us are women. And that was not intentional. It was just sort of a bonus after the fact. And it's a great team. And I'm actually really grateful to be part of it.
Cool. I mean, so it sounds like you might term sales enablement. Is that what you'd call this role with business intelligence?
I think everyone's term for that word might be a little bit different. I think traditionally sales enablement is more like training based. So it's definitely what I'm doing is definitely, you could probably like call it sales insight, where we are definitely trying to change behavior down to the sales rep level. But we are, you know, my direct stakeholders are, you know, the directors, the VPs, and even the CEO of the division that I work for. So sales insights would be what I would go with, Dave, rather than sales enablement.
Excellent. That makes a lot of sense.
Okay, good.
So you've only been there for 5 months now, 6 months, going on 6 months. So, you know, compared to Capella and some of the traction that you were lacking at Capella, do you feel like you're getting more traction here? And if so, you know, what does that look like? What does it feel like to be in a different environment with more traction?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some similarities. I think anytime you work for a large organization or a highly regulated organization like Capella, making any real change is like, you know, turning a giant ship. It takes time and it takes effort. And I think the biggest difference between Capella and Wolters Kluwer is that I do have support, at least in my sort of immediate circle. And there's, you know, lots of other people that get it. It's still going to take us time to make those changes, but at Wolters Kluwer, I don't feel like I'm doing it alone. That's probably the biggest difference.
So Serena, you kind of called yourself like this data champion, and you've done it at multiple organizations now. What is the hardest part about championing a more data-driven or data-informed approach, and how do you solve that?
If I could answer that question succinctly, I would probably be on a beach somewhere. I think in a nutshell, the hardest part about this is changing human behavior, right? It's people focus on technology and they focus on process and they like heavily underestimate the change management aspect of this kind of work. That's the beast, right? Like, Wolters Kluwer is a pretty finance driven organization. So, and that's where you see, you know, the tons of spreadsheets and people who have been doing it that way at this company for, you know, 10, 20, 30 years even. And you don't change that kind of behavior, those habits overnight. It takes convincing. And boy, I tell you, anytime they have a reason to poke a hole in you know, some analysis or report or dashboard that you present about the data not being right, they make that themselves known, right? They're pretty loud about that. And so it's sort of this constant battle to get them to trust the data, to trust the process, to trust you. And I think, again, that goes back to creating that partnership, right? And creating an authentic connection and employing empathy and being able to have those crucial conversations. And really build a true relationship, because once you get there, they're going to be less apt to just, you know, dismiss what you know, the change that you're trying to implement. And it does take, you can't do it alone, right? It takes a team of multi-talented people. And I think you absolutely have to have like an organizational effectiveness, change management perspective, you know, aspect of that team, a professional in that space, someone who's who has spent their life in that kind of experience, like yourself and Dave.
You've worked so much in that sales arena, and I always find that is an interesting space because it is one of those spaces where there's so much of it is incentivized on what performance is if you're a salesperson. And there's always a look to try to get that edge if you're a salesperson to be more successful and get bigger bonuses and all that stuff. But it does seem like there, at least in my experience, a challenge with getting salespeople to really pay attention to the data as much as, which could help them be better in their job and hence get bigger bonuses. Could you talk a little bit about, you know, what you've seen in your different roles and where you think if you're in the whether it's a business intelligence or a data science role, how they could work better with sales teams that you think to be more effective with sales data?
So I've been on both sides of this equation, and you know, I think that there's analysis and data and insights that's available and designed for the reps, like at the sales rep level, and then there is more of that executive reporting. But if you want to get your sales reps to care about that data, it has to be actionable. I think the majority of the time that data is all about performance, right? It's showing them, oh, here's how far you are from your target this month or this quarter. And a lot of times, you know, that might not be good news, right? And so they sort of naturally have this aversion to seeing that data because it's A, they just feel like someone's tracking and monitoring them rather than trying to truly help them do their job. So I think it's really important to think about that perspective when you're designing, you know, any kind of data output that's going to a sales rep, that it can't feel like just like a Big Brother system. It has to be valuable. It has to be preventative. It has to be actionable. And, you know, obviously I'll be the first one to say that that's far easier said than done. But I think that's, you know, the majority of what I've seen when it comes to sales reporting is that it's performance monitoring. It's after the fact. It's not actionable. So it gets dismissed and it becomes a nuisance for that sales rep.
Well, it really gets to what you were talking about with empathy. So understanding sales rep and what they're going through on a day-to-day basis, making sure that the data reflects the sales rep's mentality and where you want them to go from a behavior standpoint, right?
Right. Exactly.
Can you give an example where maybe it was done well and that you saw sales teams really absorbing the data and using it in a format that, you know, was helping them be better at their job?
You have to give them like that granular level of detail, right? And if a sales rep, you know, they are probably using Salesforce or some sort of CRM system to, and that's what they know. That's how they are tracking their success. So you have to make sure that the data that you're presenting back to them is in line with the way that they interact with that data in their CRM. So if they look at things by opportunity name and account name, like, you know, then leave out opportunity ID and account ID and just kind of get rid of that fluff that they don't really care about. And, you know, focus on the stages that they use, like their sales nomenclature. Just so, yeah, I think the times that I've seen it done even remotely well, it is where they have made a concerted effort to align the format and the nomenclature to what the sales rep is actually used to seeing from their CRM perspective.
Makes sense, just like you're saying with the empathy, thinking about that other person's shoes.
Yeah.
So talking about a little bit, one thing Matt and I talk a lot about is data culture. And when you've been to a number of organizations, what things have you seen done well to positively change data culture? And maybe what are some things that you've seen that are maybe a little bit toxic? Maybe they're well-intended, but they don't really turn out well in that trying to change data culture.
I think that those who tackle that from a programmatic perspective, meaning that they have an actual plan, right? It's not just somebody who's like, I think this is a great idea, and I'm just going to shout it to the world every chance that I get, right? People who have established a programmatic approach to rolling this out across the organization. There's a process. You know, like I mentioned before, like change management, that organizational effectiveness component needs to be there. So that said, I think you also need to relent yourself that it's going to take time, right? So don't be under the delusion that you're going to see any changes overnight. What I've seen not work well is just the lack of follow through. So like, I don't, you guys have probably seen the term like open office hours, where, you know, they'll roll out a report and then somebody, you know, an analyst or whoever, somebody in some sort of position will, you know, send a blast email to across the organization and say, I open office hours, you know, you come to me with your problems when you have them during this time and I'll help you solve them. I've seen that not work well a number of times because people suck at asking for help, right? They're afraid that their questions are going to make them look stupid. So it like I said, it needs to be a more of a proactive thing. So rather than a group setting, you know, having people go one-on-one with people, sitting down shoulder to shoulder with them, walking them through to how to understand and unravel, like, what is this report? What is this dashboard telling me? How do I use it? What do I do next? Really just handholding them through that process over and over and over again until they get it.
Yeah, like you're saying, I mean, in a programmatic format, you really got to really think through that. And, you know, when you're rolling things out, it's not just a, hey, here's this new thing we're all going to follow. And, you know, whichever department, yeah, just, and it can't just be from above, right? I mean, one of the things we talk a lot about is, you know, a top-down approach, but also a bottom-up approach when you're making any change. And if it comes from one direction, it tends to be less effective than coming from both directions.
Exactly. Yep. If it's a top-down directive, it's just one more thing. It's just one more mandated thing that you have to do. And the real value is overlooked. And vice versa, if you don't have the executive support, well, you're probably not going to have the resources to implement something effective.
So Serena, you've done this in a number of places and you've seen things work successfully and some things not work successfully. For a listener to the podcast who might be in a similar role to you, right? They are new in role or they're new at their company. They see a ton of opportunity with data, but they don't know how to start solving that. And they see that it's not just a technical problem, but more of a people problem. What would be your number one, number two first steps for that person to start moving in a more data culture, building that data culture? What would you tell them to do?
First thing, remind yourself that you attract bees with honey, not vinegar, right? And I'm speaking from personal experience. Make friends. Figure out who you can bring onto your side, who you can recruit as a cheerleader for your cause, because you're not going to be able to do it alone. So the first thing I would do is find some allies. The second thing that I would do is start with something really small, right? Find a quick win and show your value and show the worth and show the potential impact with something small and then grow from there. You're not going to change that you're not going to write that ship overnight. So make friends and start small are my two bits of advice.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's fantastic advice. So let's say that you've built something small, right? You got it out there in the world. Do you subscribe to the, you know, build it and they will come mentality? Or is that part of the process as well as getting that thing out in the world and almost being like that, a marketer?
Yeah. Build, like, your job does not end when the development is done. That's, I would say, when it starts, right? You know, we talk about this work as being, you know, 90%, you know, wrangling with the data and 10% development, but that doesn't even take into account the work that you need to do once the development is done, because it's not an if you build it, they will come situation. You have to sometimes drag them kicking and screaming to what you've done. But if you are passionate and you believe that there's value in showing people what you've done and getting them on board with that and moving on to the next thing, then you're going to be committed to, you know, setting up meeting after meeting after meeting with whoever might be the stakeholders for that quick win. And in a, you know, in a safe environment, make them feel comfortable to ask the questions, to get them to a level of understanding, to get them to understand what you're trying to do. Yeah, it's not easy.
Well, one thing I wanted to talk about, Serena, and I know this is jumping topics a little bit, but I know earlier this year before the, or actually end of last year, before going to the Tableau conference, you competed in a competition that was, you know, pre-Tableau conference, and you did pretty well. Could you talk a little bit about that and a little bit more about the competition?
Yeah, so it was a Tableau competition. I think it was definitely a precursor to the conference, but essentially it was opened up to all of the Tableau user groups across the country to compete in, you know, building a dashboard. And the criteria was that it had to be something about New Orleans, because that's where the conference was being held. And really, that was really the only criteria. It had to be New Orleans related. So we put the word out to the Tableau user group here in the Twin Cities, and just said, "Hey, if you want to be part of it, I'm gonna be at this coffee shop at this time. Come find me." We didn't get a great turnout, to be honest, which was sort of a good and a bad thing, right? You always want more participation, but I do think that with a smaller team, you can work a little bit more agile, a little bit more quick to get things done. So we ended up with a team of, there was three of us, and we sort of broke up into two teams. Originally, we were told that we could submit just one dashboard for this competition. And I had made the argument that since we were the Twin Cities, since we were representing two, that we could submit two. So between the three of us that were working on these dashboards, we submitted two. They were selected the first and third place winners for the competition, and they were displayed up at the conference. And we actually won, I think it was $500. And so we bought something fun for the guy, Jeff Plattner, who took first place in that contest, and then we're stashing away the rest for something fun for the whole group. So yeah, it was a fun thing. So it was me and Jeff Plattner, and then I want to give credit to Trisha Duncan as well.
So I have to ask, you submitted to Minneapolis and St. Paul. For anybody who has visited this town or lives in this town knows that there's a healthy rivalry between the two. So I have to ask, did the Minneapolis or the St. Paul group win first place?
You know, you're not going to get that answer out of me, Matt, because we didn't actually have to assign the one dashboard with a city. We just got to submit two. So I'm glad I can avoid answering that.
I think the last thing I wanted to talk about was maybe some early thoughts from you, Serena, on the data literacy movement that's kind of sweeping LinkedIn and Twitter right now. I think there's certainly some overlap in data literacy with what you're talking about, you know, which is really being that internal champion for a more data-driven organization. Maybe talk a little bit about your own perspective or thoughts on what data literacy means to you and why it's important.
To me, I think in this day and age, everyone is an analyst, or they should be if you're not, right? Data touches everything that we do. I mean, it's just become a ubiquitous thing. So having the ability to know where to access data that might help you solve your problems, and having the ability to analyze that data in a meaningful way to help you solve your problems. There are people that are learning how to do that regardless of what field they're going into. It's being woven into just about every degree program across, you know, at least the, you know, the educational institutions that I have seen. They have woven that into, you know, the business side of the fence, the technical side of the fence. You see it everywhere. So there are people entering this workforce that know how to do that. So to me, it is everyone understanding that data and analytics is part of their job, And if you don't get that, someone who does get that is probably going to come and replace you.
I mean, I think there's applications there, even, you know, in your current role, you don't expect every salesperson to be able to build dashboards like your team does, but you do have an expectation that those salespeople are capable of reading and understanding what you're producing, right?
Yeah, it's just, it becomes less about explaining to them how things work under the hood to try to overcome any doubt that they might have about what you're producing. If they understand just sort of the general process of how this all works, you're one step ahead towards getting them to use what you produce.
Serena, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show today. Thank you. And I think like everything that you've been saying just resonates with me and my own experiences. Certainly, you know, there's certainly so many challenges on the data science side still and data infrastructure. And those are still absolutely critical pieces of the puzzle. But, you know, what you're talking about, that human side of the equation is such a challenge. And I don't think enough people are really talking about that or realize how important it is that you have to marry the technical with the human side of the equation. So we really appreciate your thoughts. Is there any way, or what would be the best way for our listeners to get in contact with you if they want to learn more?
Well, definitely LinkedIn. You can find me there, but I am absolutely fine if people email me personally. My email address is serenajroberts@gmail.com, and I'm always open to chatting with anyone about pretty much anything, as long as I have time.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again, Serena. Have a great day.
Yeah. Thanks, you two guys. It's been fun. Take care.
The Data Able podcast is produced by Dave Mathias and Matt Jesser and made possible by Beyond the Data. At Beyond the Data, we are on a mission to help high-performing individuals successfully become champions for a more data-driven approach in their organizations. We believe that data science is only part of the equation. Getting value out of data requires building a culture that starts with you, is supported by executives, and trickles down to every facet of your organization. You can learn more about Beyond the Data and our approach at gobeyondthedata.com.